Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggles for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, racism, socioeconomic class division, and gender-based violence. Joining us today is Ms. Basila Bokoko. She is a pioneering business leader who focuses on establishing global alliance partnerships, building high-performance organizations, and creating pathways for businesses looking to enter new international markets. She currently serves as the CEO and founder of BBS International, a business development and market development consulting firm. Basila is considered one of the 10 most influential Spanish women in the American business world for the ability to develop and cultivate relationships with foreign heads of state, ministries of commerce, economy, and international business leaders. She serves as a spokesperson, ambassador, and presenter to organizations across the globe, including the 168-year-old world-renowned Liceu Barcelona Opera House. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
We're so glad that you could make it in person.
Me too. It's always better to see you face to face.
Now, reading through your bio, I came across a statement which you made, which says, "I am a cultural hybrid. I was born in Spain to African parents, became an American citizen, and have been living in New York City for the last 15 years. You bring what I call an African epic story, which is similar to many immigrants with African roots. Can you please share with us some of the memories from when you were growing up? What influenced you in those years? And what do you think has left the biggest mark on you to make you the person that you are today?"
Well, I think that part of who am I is that I was born in a different country where pretty much I was like a foreigner there, because I was born in the 70s, in 74, and it was very difficult to see African kids there. So for me, it was different to identify with other children. And but I think also that I learned to really love my heritage, and it took time, because before I had several identity crises. I remember when I was little, and you don't see colors when you are small. So one day when I came from school and I hear somebody's called me black, I was a little bit surprised, because for me, I was like any other kid. I think that the perception that you have when you are 8 or 9 years old is that everyone is equal. I mean, you don't really see colors at that time. At least I didn't see them. And I came back from school and I was so sad. And my parents told me, "But look in the mirror, you are black." And I think that I just embrace my race and my heritage, and I learned to do that, and I read a lot about African culture, and my parents really make a huge effort for me, don't forget where I'm coming from.
Which country do you come from specifically?
Both of my parents are from Equatorial Guinea. I mean, I never could choose, you know, one particular place where I'm from, so that is for me the more difficult question to answer. That's why I say I'm a cultural hybrid, because I feel that I will not be real if I said I'm only from Spain, because I'm also very African and I really love to be from African roots. And at the same time, professionally, I grow in America and I love United States, and it's also part of me. So I just embrace the three continents.
Well, it's a fantastic blend, and I'm sure it sets you in good stead on dealing with all of the work that you do from a cultural perspective.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
An important learning curve that I've found for many of our listeners on the show is that through the different radio programs that we've had, I ask all of my guests who've made tremendous achievements in their respective fields on what factors they think contributed to their success. Some of them, for instance, mention the role that their mothers played in shaping their views. Others talk about hard work. But there are two keywords that keep repeating, and one is discipline, and the second is perseverance. In your opinion, what have been the key drivers for your success?
Well, I think discipline is one of them. And I think the way I was raised was with a lot of discipline. My parents really make a huge impact in my life, because I was the first generation born in Spain. And they make sure that I took every opportunity and I really become responsible for not only my future, but the future of my brothers and other people who come behind me. And because we were first generation, we have to give a very good example. And my parents make a huge effort that, like immigrants, that we don't behave in a way that could shame our people, or people who have labeled us in a matter that it could be not beneficial for the rest of the community. So I think that I did that, and also the books was a great inspiration. I spent a lot of time, because my parents work a lot, by myself, and I was really very inspired by books, and I think that also shaped my future and the way that I saw the world, because I had the possibility to dream. I think that when I was 9 or 10 years, I already kind of designed the kind of life that I wanted to have. And that's why I really believe that any person, doesn't matter what is the background, economic background, where you're born, you could definitely design your life. Because I did. I kind of imagine myself always in airplanes and being in a big city, being an executive, but I also wanted to have a family, and I didn't want to forget my feminine side, and I also enhance it. So I think that it's discipline, belief in yourself, because I really believe that I could make it. And that was a matter of faith, to have faith that you are the person who have the magical wand to make things happen.
So we're talking discipline, faith, and I think that being able to identify those seeds and what it is that you want to do at a very early age, they help you set the strategy and the path for life going forwards into the future. Then you know what you want to focus on.
Yes, absolutely.
And as you've alluded to briefly, education has been very important to you. Mm-hmm. In fact, throughout your career, you've advanced yourself using various learning institutions, whether it was in 1998 when you attended the Universidad San Pablo, CEU, in Madrid, where you earned an MBA in Business Administration and Economics. And in the same year, you earned a Certificate of British Law from the University of Manchester. And you've also completed your Master's in International Relations at the City College of New York in 2003. Can you share with us some of your views on education, especially as a tool in the hands of women to change their lives and their children's lives for the better?
Well, I think that this is basically the truth. When mother is educated, she wants the kids to be educated. My mother is a nurse, and I think that I saw her work, so she was also my role model, because a lot of kids in my class, the mothers didn't work, but I never felt abandoned because my mother was working. Actually, I admire that she loved her job and she had a passion, because she became a nurse just because she really wanted to take care of the patient, having this passion for her job. And also, my father is a lawyer, and I grew up with books and seeing him preparing his cases and everything. And I think it's very important for the parents to see that if they really want to push their kids to have education, the kids are going to always mimic who you are.
And did you find that with your dad, he was an influence for you to pursue aspects of a legal career?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think it was a huge influence for me. And it's very interesting, because when I was little, if you ask me what I want to study, I would say, I want to become a nurse and a lawyer, because I didn't want to upset any of my parents and I wanted to make them happy both. And I didn't realize until I finished what I wanted really to do. And it was when I was doing the MBA, when I come across marketing international and international trade, and I said, this is really my call. The more exposed you are to different areas, and that's what I always been, I've been encouraging young people to read and see, because I studied law and it was very easy to study, but it wasn't my passion. It was because I thought I could get a job, and this is what my parents really thought. And economics, it was also because I was not able to make a decision. I said it could be a big combination, and I found this program in the CEU San Pablo that they put together both degrees, and you just have extra work, but you could finish both. But I also believe that the biographies I read about women who made it, and I remember at that time Margaret Thatcher, Benazir Bhutto in Pakistan. I mean, I saw women with huge role models, and they were PhDs, so they had a lot of education. So I think that also helped them to become role models to other women. So I realized that education was key if I wanted to do something different with my life. Without these tools, it's very difficult to pursue anything.
And irrespective of the discipline excuse me, that you study, it still provides such valuable tools to take on other pursuits in your life, even if it's not the 100% direction that you want to be channeled into at that present time.
I think so, because actually a lot of things, and I always tell the young people, and they should listen to this, you're thinking, why in the world am I studying this? I'm never going to use it. Well, it comes at the moment that you less expect it. I think without this legal background that I had, a lot of the negotiations that I have to encounter in my life, the way you speak, the way you communicate, it was very useful. In the economics, the same thing. These tools help me to see a balance sheet and see in my business if things are growing. I could prepare a cash flow and see. I have tools that before, it's just foreign languages if you never study economy. You have a better scope of the world when you are educated.
We'll take a short break.
Hi, I'm Zonke Dikana, a South African Afro-soul musician, songwriter, and producer. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance.
Today, we're talking to Ms. Basila Bokoko, CEO and founder of BBES International, business development and marketing development consulting firm. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. In our previous segment, Ms. Bokoko mentioned that she is a cultural hybrid, elaborating that her roots are originally from Equatorial Guinea, being born in Spain and now settling down in the USA. She mentioned that her key factors to success were centered on discipline and faith and the instrumental role that both her parents played from a role model perspective in terms of pursuing and shaping her ideals and the importance of education. And tapping back into the education element, I read that you are most proud of your organization, BBALP, Basila Bokoko African Literacy Project, which I understand is a non-profit, non-partisan international organization headquartered in New York, and you have subsidiaries in Ghana, France, and Spain. And its mission is to promote literacy among African people via the development of modern and sustainable libraries. Can you share with us some of the vision for this particular project?
Well, I think I should start by the beginning. my first trip to Africa was back in 2009. And it changed my life because when I went to Ghana, it was the first country that I visited, I realized that I could, any of the kids that I met, it could be me. And this trip became like kind of a social trip because the reality that I saw, it just changed me inside. And it happened that I met the chief of Kokofu, which is a little location next to Kumasi. And many things happened, but to make the story short, he gave me a piece of land and I decided to donate the library because the history that the Ashanti group had, it was really amazing. But I could not find, and I went to different libraries around the town and I could not find anything. So that's how I came the idea to build libraries. And when I went back to New York, this mission came to me that this should be my mission, and this is how I started. So it was not that I wanted to be always a philanthropist, or it was part of my map of dreams. It wasn't. It just happened that something changed inside me when I put my feet in the continent for the first time, and then I realized that what I love the most is reading, and I like the feeling of having children touching these books. And I mean, why not use all my network? I have a very big network that I've been building up through years of different relationships. Why not to have this help? At the end of the day, what I'm asking is only for books. And then I just ship them to the continent, and we create a beautiful space that is always in line with the nature. And this is how we started. We have now a library in Ghana. We have a library in Kenya, Uganda, Zimbabwe, in Equatorial Guinea, in Nigeria, in Rwanda. We cooperate with different libraries that they're already there, but we send books. And, you know, one of the places that we are looking to is South Africa.
That's great. Well, it sounds like you're rapidly expanding your footprint in the continent. And this all started from 2009.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be our fifth year anniversary. And because it's self-funded, and I'm not planning with this like to grow like a huge organization. For me, it's more what I believe that is my mission. So from the benefits that I get from all the business ventures, I'd like to allocate certain amount of funding for doing my dream, which is to share with people. For me, it's just building libraries.
And what is your aim, long-term vision? So now we're talking about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 countries already in play. Mm-hmm. Long term, how do you see it rolling
out? Well, long term, ideally, will be to have in the whole continent. I mean, I always think big, and this is will be my dream to be in rural areas all around the continent. But what is really my biggest aim will be to create a publishing company that people could publish their books in their autochthon language, because there is so many different oral traditions that have been lost that there is no way to record that. And when I spend time with the elders in different areas, they have beautiful stories, and they could become great children books. But the thing is that there is no one who could create the platform to publish these books in the language.
And that was exactly my first thought when you said that you were looking for the books when you were talking about the Ashanti, hearing all of their history. Mm-hmm. And I said to myself, but it's all oral tradition, so you can look for books and there'll be so few.
I know. And this is one of the biggest challenge, and hopefully this is the reason why I put in the message out there, and I never thought that we will get so much help, because the truth is that I was able to do a lot because a lot of people really love the project and they start helping. So if someone really wants to partner with us, and we like to work with different organizations, because I didn't do this by myself. I partner in different countries with different places. We work with the schools. We love to be within the schools because kids are already there and then they could use the library, and it becomes something part of the community. And we also like to include the parents and the grandparents. And I think that eventually, if we have somebody who help us or things happen and I could make it, it will be my dream to really have this oral tradition to be published.
Oh, I do hope that those oral traditions, you manage to capture them from a publishing point of view, even if it is an audio format, not necessarily in the print space. You mentioned briefly some of the networks that you have been involved in, and you've developed cultivated relationships with foreign heads of state, ministers of commerce, economy, and international business leaders. And in effect, you see yourself as a bridge builder, structuring strategic partnerships among international trade organizations, helping businesses to enter international markets in Europe, USA, and Africa. Can you share with us some of the work that you do in Africa besides the Basila Bokoko African Literacy Project, and some of the personal success stories behind the international trade partnerships?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that because of my experience with the Spain U.S. Chamber of Commerce and working with the European countries, I was missing one leg in my professional path, business path, and it was Africa. So in 2012, I realized that it was something that I could give also my experience, I could share it. And several different, basically trade and tourism ministries approached me to help, because I was able to market different countries internationally or attract foreign investments or just change the perception that people have about the country. So I work with different countries like Rwanda. I work with Equatorial Guinea. I work with Zimbabwe. I mean, just, you know, the perception that is out there about these countries is only focused in the political landscape, which when you make business is not always the most important thing.
And it's often anything that is fed through from CNN in terms of breaking news that has that international appeal, which often is not necessarily too positive.
Exactly. So why, you know, we don't forget these aspects that are negative, and we focus on the good things that these countries have to offer. And you could enhance tourism. So that's how I leverage these relationships, and I connect them with different countries. And actually, it was very successful. They were able to see the reality by themselves. And some countries, they're very great. I work also with great example was in Equatorial Guinea, was the Miss Tourism context, where all the countries around the world were, you know, making a huge beauty context, and it was very beautiful to make, and I was one person hosting and helping to leverage the whole process. And I think that it was great for the country to receive all this attention, and it was great that also people saw how professional, because they work extremely professional, and this conference has been done in different countries. I've been in South Africa with the World Economic Forum 3 years ago, and it was amazing. So I think that the perception that people have about the professionalism in Africa, or is always the word corruption, is close by anything that has to do with Africa. And you might find people who are extremely helpful, professional, responsible, and serious. And you might find the opposite. I found also that in the Western world.
Exactly. You have the same, you've all got different people in different areas.
Exactly.
And you cannot just tar everyone with the same brush.
Exactly. I think that is unfair sometimes for the African continent, the way that is labeled. And I found great experiences.
So important to change perceptions and to have the right experiences. Now, you are undoubtedly a businesswoman. The working world, I find, is typically designed around what I term as man's hours,
yeah,
where we as a society are almost losing half of our best multitaskers from the workforce due to traditional expectations from women to have to reform and restructure their timetables plus their family needs. What is your perspective of this? Like, given all of the areas, the different countries that you've traveled to, what's your take?
Well, what I believe is that women, we are very hard on ourselves. We want to accomplish everything 100%. And we have all the superwoman complex that we should be perfect wives, perfect mothers, perfect daughters, perfect co-workers, perfect bosses. So we are really putting a lot of effort to manage balance in everything that we do. But I don't think the balance comes from making everything perfect. It just comes from making the best that you could. And I also believe that sometimes women, to match the expectations that men have, and because we are kind of traumatized by the fact that they will say, oh, I'm too emotional, or if I don't go to work because I have to take care of my kids, I don't look as professional as that, or I could not accomplish my goals. I think that we should definitely change that, and sometimes even women, we are harder with women, and really realize that what it makes us woman is exactly what is the beauty of what we have, and use it. Because I work in a very women environment, actually, in my organization, I work with a lot of women, and I think that because I need that flexibility, I give them the flexibility. But the women, when we got this flexibility, we are very responsible in discipline to make things happen in our own time. Also, we are great multitaskers because our brain is designed to take different things at the same time. I work also with a lot of men, and in the world that I come from, all my board of directors were 40 men and me. And when I was presenting something, it was difficult because they would say, well, focus first in this, first in that. And it's difficult for them to focus in 3 or 4 things at the same time. But I believe that women, we should be nicer to us, ourselves, support each other. That's the reason why women organization, associations, what Women Tea is doing, it's so helpful for other women to see other women that we also face problems and issues. And I mean, we all have to be human at the same time. It is not possible that you could do many things at the same time, but you still have to have your personal life together. Because I believe also that when any area of your life is falling apart, it also is going to affect your work. So we also have to take care of ourselves. Sometimes we forget that the first love of our life should be ourselves. And this is why women, we get in trouble, because if your parents are sick, you want to take care of them. You know, whatever people need, your friends, you're gonna go and help them. Your kids, your husbands. I mean, we want to, you know, all these worlds are open, and we want to try to be our best. But I think that when you're not okay, nobody around you is okay.
But I think you have raised a wonderful expression which I haven't heard before, the superwoman complex.
Yeah, it's, I see it all the time.
And I think it describes exactly what you've just reiterated for us, that we have to become more human, looking after yourself as a priority in order for you to take care of all of those other aspects. We'll be right back after this.
Hi, this is Lira, South African Afro-Soul singer and songwriter. You're listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amalia Malka on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, a program that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, and democracy.
Today we're talking to Ms. Basila Bokoko, CEO and founder of BBES International, a business development and market development consulting firm. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. In our previous segment, Basila was speaking about her Basila Bokoko African Literacy Project, BBALP, a non-profit, non-partisan international organization, which has now expanded across the continent from 2009 into 8 markets, with the whole aim of being able to develop modern and sustainable libraries, which is one of her passions through education and promoting literacy. Now, moving on to our next segment. Growing female leadership capacity is important for the future of women across Africa and throughout the world. And we've spoken about some of the women's organizations which play a role in this development, whether aspects from UN or the progressive women's movement and other organizations. I read that you are an advisory member of the United Nations EmpreTech Women Programs, which fosters entrepreneurship skills amongst women in 3 continents, Latin America, Africa, Middle East. Mm-hmm. How do you see female leadership in Africa? And how do you see us building leadership capabilities and mentoring our future women leaders?
Well, I think African women leadership is very advanced compared with the other continents. I will say that the group of women in key positions in the government is bigger actually in Africa than in Europe.
Significantly. Well, look, I mean, we have Rwanda ranks first. Senegal is sitting round about 6th or 7th. South Africa is round about 9th, according to Interparliamentary Union.
Yeah.
In South Africa, we've got about 41% female representation. But you're so right. When you look at it from the U.S., I think when I last checked, they're around about 85th and had about 17%.
Exactly, yeah. And in Europe, it's even worse.
Yes.
So I believe that African women leadership is highly advanced in comparison with other continents. What I would like to see is more self-confidence from the women. I see that we have women in very great leadership positions, but in general, women, they're not able to really see how great they are, to say it, to promote themselves. If when I go and from one school to another and I speak with different kids or universities, I see that women, the way they're very shy when they present themselves or how intelligent they are, how many great things they could do. I think it's very important to market yourself. And when you have the skills that are great, say it. And, you know, why not? Sell yourself.
And I think that's something which comes through very apparently on the American side, which I think you've had the benefit of being in that country.
Yeah, I think also it comes from the education that they have in the United States. Kids are taught to be leaders since their very young ages and to present themselves in a very self-confident, self-loving way. Yeah, and I think it's a cultural thing because also I grew up in Europe and I have the same situation. It's not good to say how good things you are. People have a tendency to feel that you are too arrogant when you're trying to present yourself or you're trying to sell yourself or you're just happy with who you are. So I think this is of hypocrisy in reality, because when you are a great teacher, when you are a great communicator, or you're a great football player, or you're a great nurse, and you're proud of yourself, why not to say it? Why not to? You also will inspire a lot of people when you feel that self-confidence. So I think women, it doesn't matter. You don't have to be in the government in order to be a leader. You could be a leader in a farm. But when you know that you are the best and you are doing a great job and you're happy with yourself, you're already a leader. So I think that sometimes we look too far for role models, and role models are sometimes in our homes. When your mothers, your grandmothers, your aunties, I mean, why not to really encourage women to love themselves more? Even with beauty, African women are beautiful, and sometimes even in the modeling industry and everything, there is this complex, oh, I'm too dark, or my hair is too curly, or I mean, we live through so many anxieties of identity crisis, or when women are intelligent also, they don't want to show how intelligent they are and how capable of doing things. And this is not only African women, it's in general. It's a woman problem. And I see it in Latin America, I see it in Asia, and women, we are too shy. And that's the reason why we don't get high positions sometimes in business, because when you enter in a boardroom, you're not able to sell yourself that you are the best for that position and you deserve to get paid more. And why we are still dealing with the situation is that women get paid less than men. I mean, at the end of the day, it's not the men's fault. I don't like to make responsible to men of all our things, because I don't believe really in that. I think that it's us really not believing that we could be there, or we could do something, or we could get paid for what we like to be paid for.
I think that's a really important message, and I don't think it's said enough about marketing yourself, recognizing your capabilities, and pursuing your ambition. Staying with the OmpraTech Women in Business Awards theme, during the 2014 United Nations Conference on Trade and Development, you presented the OmpraTech Women in Business Award, which is given once every 2 years, celebrating exceptional women entrepreneurs who have become successful leaders and have had impacts on their communities and beyond. Can you share with us some of the memorable moments in that, or perhaps work on some of the nominees and why they were there for those awards?
Well, this project is one of the projects that I really, really love to do, because I get to see the women doing amazing things all around the world. Through the year, I get to see all the business plan of these women who work through the centers of EmpraTech. There are centers in EmpraTech everywhere, even in South Africa. It was a woman, one of the finalists was from South Africa, actually, and she has a PR firm. And is she was attending for 3 months to this the program that is to learn how to be an entrepreneur. Another person that was very interesting and was one of the finalists also was a woman who created a company who is big in security. She's from Zimbabwe, and she created a huge company from the scratch. She started in the kitchen. I have also a huge case of in Panama of a woman who created a bakery with alternative grains. Since now everybody is gluten sensitive, she realized that in Panama there is different flours that you could create with banana, with different things.
How interesting.
And she did breads and, beautiful bakery goods that she market in Latin America. Somebody in Brazil did products with coffee, antioxidant creams. So we have amazing cases of women doing amazing things, even recycling in Ecuador, in Peru, in Chile, in Africa. I have seen the projects also with the agriculture, amazing agricultural projects, creating different foods and different systems of recycling. And all of this is made by women in the rural areas. What they get is a small microcredit with the condition that they will attend to these programs. And this program helps them to shape really the future, because they develop a business plan. They get education about accountancy, management, little things that they will help them. Because what we find out is a lot of people who do even very small business, like it could be a bakery, or it could be selling fruits in your market. If you don't have the skills that requires to really be successful in business, to maintain your family and your status and to hire people and to learn if you have to pay your employees, how much you should pay them, how many goods you have to buy, the supplier chain, all these things. It's good to have these little concepts. And when through three years, you are able to maintain your business, you are able to be part of the awards. And it's a great incentive, and it helps you because people around the world see about your project and they help you too. So I have a lot of stories, beautiful stories that I'm passionate about.
And I'd imagine with those types of initiatives that there is almost a snowball effect, because when someone sees her succeeding in her community, they want to succeed. They want to know what it's about. So you have that spin-off, and it does, to a certain extent, I'd imagine, become quite sustainable.
Certainly. Certainly, I have seen that. Because also, when a woman see the neighbor that she put a little business, and this business is growing and growing and growing, some people put little hotels in the middle of nowhere, and suddenly they were marketed well, and people came, the other person is like, oh, maybe I could do that too. What do I need to do? And I think it's really good to share with other women everything. Share your beauty secrets, share your business secrets. That's what I'm all about, to sharing, because I really believe that it's enough for everyone. We should not be threatened by the success of others. I think the more successful people it is, the better. So these women, in their communities, they inspire other women to do the same. And at the end of the day, it's better, because it's better, the whole community grows.
Well, thank you for sharing not only the successes of some of the women you've spoken about, but also giving some insight in terms of the novel ideas that people are doing. Now, during your career, no matter what part of the world you've been or the various positions that you have held, you've done tremendous things concerning women's development. In closing our discussion, can you please use this platform to send a message of hope to all those women in the continent that maybe due to circumstances, women's issues or gender equality is not necessarily the first thing on their list, but rather attending to the daily struggle of taking care of their family, raising their children, making sure that there's enough food on the table is a more pressurizing reality?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think that the message that I wanted to give them is, first, don't abandon your dreams, and don't let, I mean, you should look and for the reasons why you should do something, not the reasons why you should not do something. That will stop you. Anytime you have a project, if you only focus on the disadvantages or the problems that you might encounter, then you're focusing in the negative, and this will bring the fears. But when you put a list about why I'm supposed to do that, even if I have a family, even if you live in a very closed-minded society where men don't let you. I mean, I have seen a lot of cases of success and people insisting. Persistence is a very important thing. I could share with you the case of women in Kenya, in Masai Mara. I work in a project with a Spanish company, footwear company called Picolinos, and this gives employment to 3,600 women. But these women, they never give up. They wanted to change their lives, and they did. And it was really a society, this polygamous society, where they live from the men in a very close environment. And when they found this way to do something, they designed a collection of footwear that is marketing around the world, and they did it with partnership, but they were looking for help. These people went to the embassy of Spain every single week walking just to get the help that they needed, and somebody heard their voice, and they were able to change their lives. And also they changed the society, because the men started to really realizing that when these women worked, the whole community benefits. The better food comes to the table, the kids go to school, and actually they end up helping them to finish the work and taking care of the kids. So the whole interaction between the men and women in the community start changing, and they start to respect themselves and each other, and even feel admiration about what the women were doing. So I think that instead of focusing on why not, just focusing on the why yes.
I think that's a wonderful message to close the show on. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been wonderful to have you here. Real pleasure listening and hearing all of the stories that you've shared from your experiences, your paths, and we look forward to hearing how your future developments progress.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure for me to be here. And thank you especially for you for having me here.
You have been listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, and we have been talking to Ms. Basila Bokoko, CEO and founder of BBES International, a business development and market development consulting firm.